It's not like there's a test before you have kids. Families form, plain and simple. And while most of them get by okay, some families have to work a little harder to hold together and function well as a loving, caring unit. And it is for those families that the Family Nurturing Center in Medford exists. It offers a number of programs, including one called Healthy Food for Healthy Families, a way to strengthen nutrition and the family unit all at once. Doug Loftall is a teacher and care coordinator at the Family Nurturing Center and runs the food program and is our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange today. Doug, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us first about the basic mission of what goes on at the Family Nurturing Center and what kinds of people are going to come to you and how they find you.
Okay. Well, our basic mission there is to help families. Many of the families that we work with are really going through a hard time. They come to us through child welfare, through the court system, through the recovery system, or people can walk in and self-refer themselves. Usually it's people who are having we're a relief nursery. Our main mission is to help families stay together and to strengthen families and to help them achieve their goals. Most of their goal is to just become self-sufficient, to be able to be good parents, and to just have a normal life, really, after going through some pretty significant struggles.
Are these often cases of families that formed, accidentally, I guess is the word that people used to use, where people ended up having children without really thinking about it all the way through?
A lot of times. I think there's quite a diversity in the families that we work with, but it's very typical that the parents we see are, you know, really children who have had a really tough time growing up. It's very common that we find parents who had started using drugs very early, were on their own early, who've experienced their own significant trauma also. And yeah, then they have a family, and many of them lack the skills, they lack the experience and the role models how to do that. And so that's where we step in, is to really help them to figure out what they need, what skills they need to strengthen their families and to move along from there.
So they don't often possess a lot of knowledge about what a healthy family really looks like and functions like, and here they are in charge of their own.
Right, exactly. So many of them do not have the experience of a healthy family. And so, you know, we found that if not only people lacking skills, but if they lack the experience or even knowing what it is they're seeking, then it's very difficult for them to find that. So,
how long has the Family Nurturing Center been open, and what are some of the measures of success? How well are you doing?
Well, it started in 2006, and it started very small. It's been, it's seen some hard times. There's been times where it's been pretty dicey whether it was going to survive or not, actually. But the measures of success are families staying together, people being able to reunite with their children, moving out. We see families that come in with a lower incidence of involvement with child welfare. Most of our families are able to go through, get their cases closed, work through the system, and go on to be a healthy, functioning family.
And so how long ago did the Family Nurturing Center add the Healthy Food for Healthy Families program?
We've been doing it we just finished over 1 year, and we just actually this week found that we had our grant renewed from the Light and Maxi Foundation, which has been really very generous in funding this program for us.
All right, that answers a later question, which was how much longer can you do this? And the answer is at least another year.
At least another year. I hope that we're able to get it on a self-sustained footing so that we can do it forever.
Doug Loftall is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, teacher and care coordinator at the Family Nurturing Center in Medford and in charge of the Healthy Food for Healthy Families program. You can join us here if you'd like, 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, or jx@jeffnet.org. So how did the Healthy Food for Healthy Families program get started? What was the basic idea there?
Well, the basic idea is that there's a lot of stuff that we would like these parents to learn, that just like with the kids, but part of the care coordinating role is that we do home visits, we develop a relationship with the families we work with, and I and many of the people that work there notice that there's all this stuff we really want to get to, but it's not going to really happen when people are hungry. And when people are in a survival situation, they're not able to take in a lot of skills and or use those skills if they're worried about where their next meal is going to come from. So basically, the genesis of this program was trying to figure something out so we can get people to be able to have enough food, that food was healthy, and so then we can take care of basic needs first and then move along to the higher skills.
Sort of like the Maslow scale then, right? Take care
yes.
of the basic human needs first.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just common principle. So my family, my father, grew up in Nebraska on a farm, and they were there during the Dust Bowl. It was very difficult times for them. But I was always impressed by the fact that they came through that as a very tight family, very loving. They always had enough food. They took care of each other. And I think a large part of that was they had a certain skill set that enabled them to how to grow their own food, how to preserve that, how to stretch it, how to fix things, how to do things for themselves. And I had always thought, you know, that is a set of skills that could really apply today. And so the idea was to how can people with the amount of resources they have be able to get enough food and food that's healthy, and how can they increase their skill set so that then they can feel secure that they're going to have enough food and that they're going to provide that for their family.
So in a sense, they're not just learning how to feed themselves, but by doing it together, they're getting a sense of teamwork, something they can do as a family.
Exactly. And that we see part of it is also parenting skills are integrated into this. And so that as they're doing this, it's a joyful and pleasant experience. I mean, so part of the thing is like, we're going to get these kids to the table, right? And the kids are going to get there in a way that works for everybody. So it's not a battle. We come, we have a pleasant experience around the food. We're not all stressed out. We're happy spending that time joyfully. And I think that the joyful experience when people are connected in relationship, that's really how healing happens. And so we try to just give people the skills so they can have that experience.
So it's not just preparing the food, but also growing it too. Is that right? They spend some time at Hanley Farm?
Yeah. So we were able to work a partnership out with Hanley Farm and the Southern Oregon Historical Society, who owns Hanley Farm. And so we go there once a week. We work with the farmers. They've got Nick and Elizabeth out there who are great farmers. They're doing no-till on that space. They're turning that into a living, working farm. The families go out. We do a variety of farm work there. And this next year, we're going to increase that and actually have our own section where we're going to grow food.
It sounds like it's probably a bit of an awakening. And we're talking about not just the kids, but probably their parents as well, come from a culture where they've generally just been opening boxes and cans most of their lives.
Absolutely. So, and that is another piece of it that I really like tying the farming in with it, because it has this element of long-term planning, looking ahead. If we're going to think about what we're going to grow in spring, we need to be preparing that in the fall. And I think that is a skill that is able to be applied across the board.
It does sort of lend itself to other future planning, like, you know, John's going to be in kindergarten next fall, so let's think ahead to that and how we need to prepare for that in the months ahead.
Exactly, and I think that is something that is lacking in a survival situation. When you're under stress and worried about, are you really going to be able to make it? Are you going to be able to provide for your family? You're always thinking, right now, what am I going to do? And when you're thinking about that with food, then you end up probably not making really the healthiest choices.
So in addition to the work at Hanley Farm, do you encourage the families that are part of the Healthy Food for Healthy Families program to start their own patches at home, perhaps, or their own gardens with vegetables?
Well, I think that is part of it. We work. One of the things we're going to be working on is how can you grow like a little bit of salad in your apartment? And because most families are living in apartments, there's many people who are in housing. Through the On Track, the recovery program. So most people don't have like a really big space to grow food. But the things we do encourage, through the program, they get storage bins. We buy in bulk. So we're starting now. Like last week, we split out 50 pounds of rice. They take home a storage bin, and then they can have bulk food there. So over the period of the program, everyone will have storage for like rice, oats, flour, beans. Then they have the bulk goods there. We're establishing a buying group, so we buy together, pool our resources, and split it out. So you have the basic goods at home, and then where you can, during the summer, say for instance, you know, everyone gives away zucchini like crazy, right, tomatoes, you're able to take that in, and then you have the basic stuff to, and you just add to that.
So you're really providing staple foods and getting them to walk a bit away from the world of processed foods.
Exactly.
So tell us about some of the progress you've seen in individual families. There must be some stories that really stick with you as the months go by.
Yeah, I think some of the very common thing is really kids transforming what they're going to eat. And that has been a great thing where kids come in and they're like, I am not eating that. I don't know what it is, but I will not eat it. And then, you know, down the road, they're like, I want more salad. I love this stuff. And just what I love to see is just changing, seeing the patterns change about how families experience the meal time together. And I think that when families are feeling like they have a skill set, they can do this, they're empowered, that just relaxes them when they have the skills to be able to get their kids to the table, where it's like we work on like getting the kids to clean their stuff up. How are we going to, you know, get here, come to the table, have a pleasant experience? When I see a lot of the parents have had very negative experiences around food, it's very common that they're out trying to secure their own food when they're 12 years old or so, or that their meal time at home was very stressful. They bring that to the table initially with their families, and it's just really a beautiful thing to see after time of, and not just through this food program, but through all the services we provide at the center, where families are just gaining skills, and then you see that in a moment that's a real life moment, which is a family sitting down together to eat, where they're relaxed, they're smiling, they're eating healthy food, and that is a really major transformation.
It sounds like what happens is the people who need the services of the Family Nurturing Center equate from their birth families with stress. And so, of course, they're going to propagate that, and when they're the heads of their own families, right?
Yes, absolutely. And that the work with the kids is, you know, we get them young. That's when the work can be the really easiest. We see transformation happen very quickly with children. With the adults, it takes a lot more work. And so that we work with the whole family that way. And it is a lot of work for the family, but they love their kids and they want to do this for their kids. They're very motivated. And once they see things working and they buy into the process, then change can happen very quickly and very powerfully.
Let's see if we can take a call here from Thomas in Klamath Falls. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Doug Loftall from the Family Nurturing Center in Medford. Thomas, you there?
Yes, but I was calling in for the Vents Day.
Oh, okay. We'll put you on hold and then pick you up there on the other side of things. So how many people can be helped at one time by the Family Nurturing Center? I mean, it sounds like there's probably a bit of a waiting list.
There's an enormous waiting list, in fact. We have about 60 to 70 kids in therapeutic classrooms there with their families. We have also an outreach program which serves many other families, where people go out and do home visits and help coordinate services. There's also respite care that we do where families can bring in a child and drop them off once a week in a classroom, and that's not a regular classroom with the same kids, but that's a service we provide for people who are in outreach. We have home-based. There we do center-based visitation for people who are whose children are in care, and they do visits and work on parenting there. We have a program for that. It's called RBV. And so probably roughly about 100 100 families at any one time are in there with a waiting list about that size.
All right. So more grants needed, I guess, to add to the programs. But certainly the Healthy Food for Healthy Families program will continue another year because your grant was renewed.
Yes, it was.
Congratulations. Doug Loftall is a teacher and care coordinator of the Family Nurturing Center in Medford. And thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
Vents Day is coming up right now. Here's Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Jill Kerr Conway, born in New South Wales, Australia, 1934. Father was a sheep rancher. She grew up in isolation on a sheep ranch far, far from town. She became a sheep hand on the ranch, checking fences and prodding sheep from one paddock to another. Went off to college, studied history, and then spent 10 years as the president of Smith College, first woman to hold that position. She's the author of The Road from Kurrain and A Woman's Education. Jill Kerr Conway, who said, "You never know what you'll want to write until it starts writing itself in your head." It was on this day the Washington Monument was opened to the public. It had been 40 years in the building from 1848, opened on this day 1888. At the time, 550 feet high, it was the tallest building in the world. It's the birthday of James Howe McClure, born 1939, Johannesburg, South Africa. A journalist and a crime novelist. He wrote a series of crime novels in the Kramer and Zondi series set in South Africa, two detectives, one Afrikaner and one Zulu, and then wrote a couple of nonfiction books about police in Liverpool and police in San Diego. James Howe McClure, who said, "I long, long, long ago thought the finest thing to be is an entertainer, with tons of funny things to say. If people find lots more in my work, that's great. But if they just read and have a good laugh, that's fine for me." It's the birthday of the Irish poet Sharon Carson, 1948, in Belfast. Still lives there. His parents only spoke Irish at home, and the Carson children learned English playing in the streets with other children. Author of many books, including Belfast Confetti and Shamrock Tea. Sharon Carson, who said, "There's a whole language out there, and one's role as a writer is to stumble around in it." And it's the birthday of the composer Camille Saint-Saëns, born in Paris, 1835. Wrote 13 operas, of which the most famous, really the only one much performed, was Samson and Delilah. Toured frequently, playing his piano concertos all over Europe and the United States, accompanied by a servant and his pet dogs. Saint-Saëns, who said, "I like good company, but I like hard work even better." Here's a poem for today by Lawrence Ferlinghetti from A Coney Island of the Mind, number 20. The penny candy store beyond the L is where I first fell in love with unreality. Jelly beans glowed in the semi-gloom of that September afternoon. A cat upon the counter moved among the licorice sticks and Tootsie Rolls and Oh Boy Gum. Outside, the leaves were falling as they died. A wind had blown away the sun. A girl ran in, her hair was rainy, her breasts were breathless in the little room. Outside, the leaves were falling, and they cried, "Too soon, too soon." A poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, number 20, from A Coney Island of the Mind, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.